You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. It's Friday, so we're going to look ahead to next week and pick the games, but David, this is the first time we're talking this entire week. I hope everybody had a happy holiday. We've got a bit of catching up to do. So let's look back on the last two games. We'll see how we did picking those games and then look ahead to next week and guess the Heat's record. But overall, the Heat have been playing their best basketball of the season over the last six games. Miami has won 9 of their last 13. They're 16-17. They currently have the 8th best record in the East, which means if the playoffs were to start today, they would be in it. It looks like you got your wish, David.
I told you, don't let go of the rope. This was a team, playoff team from the very beginning. Look, I had moments of frustration. I can't be hypocritical and say that I didn't, lose sight of the playoffs as a potential option for this team. But, I'm glad to see that they're playing better anyway. That's the thing. I mean, it wasn't about the playoffs. Obviously, this team it doesn't seem likely to win a title. How about if we hedge our bets that way? Mm-hmm. But I didn't think the lottery or a high draft pick, a top 5 pick, was also a likely destination for a group this talented and capable of playing at such a high level. And I'm glad to see that they're playing better. And I think that's the thing that a lot of fans should be appreciating, because they're playing with intensity, they're playing efficiently, they're shooting. Overall, they've been more effective, even if they're not putting up a lot of points, but they're controlling their pace. And you have to give credit. Look, it's their style of play. Eric Spoelstra has talked about it before, and I was able to cover the team for a couple games, as did you. And I was there for shoot-around, and he talked about controlling the pace and being able to play a system of basketball where they felt comfortable. And trying to put up more points early in the season didn't work for them. Obviously, they were battling injuries, and I think that's another big part of it, is that they've gotten a much better version of James Johnson now than when he came back from injury. Even without Goran Dragic, that's allowed a guy like Justice Winslow to step in as Point Winslow, and he's done a phenomenal job. He's always looked comfortable, handling the ball. We've talked about this for years, ever since you and I were there at Summer League a couple seasons ago, talking to Juwan Howard about the expectation for Justice Winslow to be a playmaking guard. You and I have been on that bandwagon for ever since the beginning, really.
Since his rookie year, it was pretty obvious that he needed to be a ball handler. Yeah.
Yeah, and look, he's thriving in that, and I think a lot of that comes with patience, understanding the game. There has to be a certain pace that you feel comfortable being the playmaker for others, and he seems to have found that, and he's putting up a pretty fair amount of points to complement that playmaking ability, and I think this team isn't going to have a superstar. And talking with everybody, as you and I did, we realize nobody's ready to step up there, and that's fine. It's about somebody stepping up on any given night and everybody else doing their job to help complement them. On a night against the Orlando Magic, it could be Tyler Johnson. Against the Toronto Raptors, it could be Justice Winslow. Against the Milwaukee Bucks, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, it was a combination of players, but really it was Dwayne Wade hitting big shots towards the end of the game after the team had built up a big lead and were able to hold on. So this is just a fun, exciting brand of Miami Heat basketball.
They're doing it with defense. They're doing it by slowing down the pace. We've heard all about that, right? We haven't gotten a chance to really talk about it, but I do think that they're doing the zone defense thing, right?
Right.
People are wondering, okay, is this a gimmick? When do teams finally catch up to it? When does it start showing up on the scouting report and stuff like that? Because these things take time in the regular season when there isn't the game-to-game game plan. So I do think that there's a certain point of it where teams generally will probably they probably don't prepare against playing against a zone all that much.
No. And but certainly for a team, because it's not like Miami's incorporating it for 48 minutes. It's
right.
Bits and pieces here and there. If a team...
By surprise.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of quarters or in certain game situations where you could throw an opponent off offensively and make them uncomfortable. And I think that's where it's really effective.
And I want to do a little bit more digging into the numbers and do a little bit more film work on this. But my theory is... And the general idea and what I was getting to was... Teams don't prepare for it, but they sort of know or believe they know how to beat the zone. And the general theory of how to beat a zone is, okay, we'll just shoot threes because the zone is built to block off driving lanes and keep you from getting to the rim.
Right.
And that worked against a guy like Giannis, who's not going to shoot threes anyway.
Correct.
But the idea is to you know, okay, you're not going to get to the rim, but we're going to force you to take threes. But the NBA loves taking threes so much that, you know, the idea now, the consensus should be, well, the zone shouldn't work. So why is it working if everybody's so good at shooting threes now and so willing to take threes now, even deep threes? Well, I think the point is that it's not just about getting three-point shots. It's about getting good three-point shots right now in the NBA. And a lot of those three-point shots, look at the Rockets, a lot of these three-point shots come from drive and kicks. It's not enough to just shoot the three. You got to get a wide-open three. You got to get an open look. You got to get the defense moving and scrambling and trying to close out, and that way you're getting good shots. And the Heat, yeah, they're giving up a bunch of three-pointers, but they're not good three-pointers. They're not coming off of drive and kicks. They're just sort of coming off of swing, 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 shoot. You know what I mean? And I think that's why the zone is working. Again, I can't say that for certain. I got to do more work on it, but that's sort of my working theory right now. It's my hypothesis. But they're doing it with the zone. And I think another big thing here over the last 13 games or so is I think Miami's best players are allowed to play like their best players now. And that wasn't necessarily the case. And I think we could all agree that they're two best players at this point, guys on healthy on the roster, Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson. It looks like they're the two best players. Ronny Magruder's playing. Derek Jones Jr. is playing. He's had a nice year. Hassan Whiteside is playing the amount of minutes that he should be playing, 25-ish minutes a game right now. Bam Adebayo is playing more minutes like he should. Kelly Olynyk is playing in a role. James Johnson, finally healthy. I think that was, and you and I have been talking about this the whole time, of all the guys that were injured, we thought James Johnson would make the biggest difference. He's finally healthy. He's in game shape. He looks great lately. Mm-hmm. He's got all that off-ball movement, and it's all the activity that you'd want to see from him. And then Goran Dragic hasn't been healthy all year. So you take him out, let him recover. You put Justice Winslow in a situation. It's very much like Josh Richardson, you know, stepping up in place of injuries. Justice Winslow is having the opportunity to do the same thing, stepping up in place of injuries this year. He's at the point Justice position right now. He's thriving. He's doing a great job. He's energized with the ball in his hands. He's more confident than ever. And he's finally making a difference on the offensive end after being such a difference maker on the defensive end for his entire career. And so you're just, the best players are getting to play their best style of basketball in roles that suit them. And I think that's making all the difference over these last 13 games. But what I'm not willing to go to is saying, like, this is going to be the case. I'm not ready to say that they're going to tear off another 30-11 stretch right now. But it does feel like Spoelstra has sort of figured out whatever chemistry needed to be figured out for this year.
Yeah, and look, that's fair. I mean, they're already at 500 basketball. It's not like the deficit had ever gone as glaring as it was during that, you know, season a few years ago where they were 11-30. So it's not about that, but it is important to realize that this team has found a way to get everybody into a comfortable role. And you know, I think a lot of guys were probably asked to exceed what they felt comfortable doing or what they were capable of. And you know, in talking to these guys, you get a real sense that, you know, they're athletes, they're professional athletes, and they're trying their best. They're built to win. They're built to compete and try their best at as high a level as possible. But ultimately, there is, you know, a lack of ability, a lack of talent, whatever you want to claim it as, that keeps them from being able to take over games. I mean, there are very few players in this league, even if Miami just doesn't have one, there are very few players that can dominate and put up 30-plus points or, you know, on any given night. Miami just doesn't have that person. And asking guys like Magruder and to an even bigger extent, of course, Josh Richardson, asking them to start, be the dominant playmaker, score, defender, hasn't helped. This is not that team. It's not the hierarchical. The hierarchy of this team's roster isn't like another group, you know. And I asked Eric Spoelstra before the Toronto game to compare the depth on Miami's roster to, say, like the Raptors, another team that depends on depth and versatility, et cetera, just like Miami does. And he said, well, you know, they're comparable in that we both rely on depth, but the teams play so differently. Why? Because they've got Kawhi Leonard. He is one of those few players that can take over stretches of games. Miami, conversely, relies on everybody chipping in 10 to 15 points and being able, and with one person maybe standing out a little bit above that with a 20 point something game, you know, it's not maybe for a lot of fans that want a superstar, considering how Miami's had a superstar on the roster dating back to the Alonzo Mourning days. You know, maybe it's a little tough to swallow, but it works. It's been working, and we'll see.
Well, it's like he said, when was that the Magic game? Tyler Johnson scored 20 points in the third quarter.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And Spoelstra after that game basically said, look, it's not going to be like, we're happy it was Tyler Johnson. And Tyler Johnson, by the way, has been playing really well lately.
Yeah.
It's not going to be Tyler every night. But it's going to be – somebody's going to have to be Tyler Johnson every night, right? Like, right. Somebody's going to have to step up just like what you're saying. And I think – look, I joked here at the top of the show, like, you know, you've got the Christmas present that you wanted, that the Heat are going to – you know, in the playoff position right now. And I know that I've been sort of on this tank train. And by the way, I still believe firmly that the best option for this team is to get a top 10 pick in the draft this year. However, I also said that the most important thing is empowering the youngest players who are now the best players on this team. And that's what the Heat are doing. That's what Spoelstra has been able to do. He's empowering Justice Winslow, who is developing and growing and making a leap right before our eyes. He's empowering Josh Richardson, who has been phenomenal lately. And he's empowering Derrick Jones Jr., Roddy Magruder, Bam Adebayo. He's empowering the young guys, and the Heat have seen success from that. And they're not, again, they're not going to rip off, you know, another 30-11. They're not going to win 9 of their last 13 games for the rest of the season. But they're empowering the young guys. We'll see where that takes this team. And wherever it takes this team, they'll be better off for it. Because at the end of the day, it's about developing those three guys specifically, Bam, Josh, and Justice. Let's dig into the games a little bit more from last week before we look at the next week. We'll do that after this break. All right, we're back. Let's take a look at last week's games, dig in a little bit more than we already have before we take a look at next week's games and try to guess the Heat's record. As we do on Friday, we guess Miami's record. We try to keep track. We try to see who's winning. We're a couple of weeks behind. So 2 weeks ago, Friday played at Memphis, at New Orleans, and versus Houston. We covered it a little bit, but we talked before that Houston game, David. So ultimately, I ended up going 1-2. You ended up going 0-3. I won that week. You had won the week before. And then this past week, Milwaukee at Orlando versus Toronto, we ended up tying. So that gives us, for the season, we're tied for guessing the Heat's record, which sounds about right. That sounds about right for what we do here. So that Milwaukee game, you and I were there. They stopped Giannis. They stopped Giannis. They didn't limit Giannis. They stopped Giannis. And Giannis is an MVP candidate and should be an MVP candidate. Milwaukee, they were coming off of a back-to-back. They did look tired to a certain extent. But the Heat played really well in that game. Again, you and I had a chance to cover that game up close and in person. Look, I don't know that you could play the pace that they're playing right now and win at a high level, but it's working right now. And moreover, they're getting other teams to slow down with them. And I think them controlling that pace has been as important as anything else that's been going on, is being able to slow teams down, get them to play in the mud with them. And that's exactly what they did to the Bucks, who like to play super fast right now.
Yeah, Coach Mike Budenholzer has done a phenomenal job getting this team to embrace a new, more potent offensive identity, and they looked really, really good. One of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, if not the league itself. And of course, as you mentioned, Antetokounmpo looks like an MVP candidate, and he just seemed like a strangely, potent non-factor against the Heat. A combination of different defenders from, I think James Johnson primarily did a phenomenal job of making things uncomfortable for Giannis. But they had other guys throughout the night, everybody from Richardson to Winslow to even Derrick Jones Jr. got their hand
Bam,
in there.
Bam got switched on him a few times.
Right, absolutely. Adebayo, and a pretty good job, I must say. I think he's, matches him strength-wise, if not exceeds Antetokounmpo's strength and quickness. He's right up there as well. So he may not be as explosive. Very few players are, but still, he did a really, really good job. And look, they weren't getting the kind of shots they wanted. They were taking a lot of threes from the perimeter. Not a lot of those were knocking down. I think Brook Lopez was probably their best shooter from the perimeter. Guys like Chris Middleton wasn't hitting all night. Bledsoe wasn't doing much either. And, they were saying it was a really, really good game. They took a few end of game clutch moments from Dwayne Wade. That's fun. It was fun to watch. It was really, really fun to be there and see that excitement of Dwayne Wade having another big moment at the tail end of his career.
And then that last play, like in those last few seconds when it was Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow and Dwayne Wade, and ended up with like that photo of Josh Richardson Justice
turnover,
Winslow at the rim,
the steal turnover dunk.
That was awesome. That was really cool. And to see, you're right, like, The crowd lights up for Dwayne Wade, right? But yeah, they also
in a way they don't for anybody else almost really.
Really, but except for that last play where they I mean, as that was as loud as they were for that last play. Now, granted, there was context there, basically iced the game for the Heat. But when Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson connected on that last that turnover that led to the basket at the end there, I mean, they were as loud as that they were than that they were at any other point in the game. So to see that happen was really cool. There was a little bit of like that was that's sort of like a snapshot moment that you can look back on. That Orlando Magic game was really big too, because of course the Heat can't beat the Magic for some reason, but they finally got over the hump. They beat Orlando the night after that Milwaukee game in Orlando. That to me was what stood out, was that they were able to take advantage of a Milwaukee team, a very good Milwaukee team that was coming off of back-to-back, and on their own back-to-back were able to get the win in Orlando. Different guys stepped up. We mentioned Tyler Johnson. Justice Winslow again doing a good job leading the offense, and look, they finally got over the hump on the mat against the Magic. They've got another game against the Magic later in the season to even the series, and that was a big win for them.
Look, Orlando's really I think that isn't a surprise,
right.
They're going through their traditional midseason swoon, and you know, a team that you and I had talked about on Lockdown NBA being very fun and certainly had been looking like they were much improved on a,
you've talked about them being fun.
I think you and Ben Golliver and I agreed that they were fun. I mean, anyway, not quite as fun now. They've regressed a little bit there. They're struggling. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what it was. Losing Vucevic for a few games really knocked them out. But even him against the Heat, I mean, he played 29 minutes, finished 3 of 12 shooting, and maybe a little bit thrown off. A guy who's had some really big games against Miami, he certainly seemed uncomfortable. So maybe that zone defense really was able to get to him. And you can't, you know, overstate the importance of Tyler's game in the starting lineup. Finished 9 of 15. He's had a couple big games against the Magic before, and this was not an exception. So for whatever reason, he's not happy against Orlando, and he likes to play against them at a high level, and he certainly showed it that night.
And then the big one, even though this was their only loss from this group of games, was against Toronto. But despite it being their only loss, you could argue it was probably their most impressive game, right? I mean, the way that Justice Winslow in particular, they ended up losing the game, but the way that Justice Winslow looked specifically against going Kawhi Leonard, there was a few moments there where he was able to take Kawhi off the dribble, almost made Kawhi fall back on one in particular play coming around his screen and then just going right towards the rim. We've talked about Justice Winslow's quick first step. Maybe that took Kawhi off guard a little bit, but Winslow, again, had a really effective game, looked probably as comfortable as ever and looked as explosive as ever. You could see the improvement every time or in every night that Justice Winslow is playing that point guard position. But a lot of guys have stepped up over the last few games. I mean, Josh Richardson had a really solid game going 3 of 5 from 3-point range, 6 of 12 overall, 17 points. Richardson's played phenomenally over the last few games. I wanted to dig into his numbers a little bit more. But would you agree with me that Toronto game, despite the loss, they were able to battle back into it against a really good Raptors team, which is probably the best team in the Eastern Conference. Despite the loss, they looked as good as ever.
You could make that argument, and I can understand why you're making it, and that's fair. I know a lot of people, including the Heat themselves, are taking positives out of this. I am still somewhat upset by the fact that they had a 17-point lead that they relinquished. And I think that's still what separates this team, is that they can be very good, as you and I have talked about. You know, they're obviously playing at a very high level, but they're still not a killer. You know what I'm saying? They're still not capable of closing out a team and making sure that team doesn't find a way to come back. And I have to give credit to Toronto, but at the same time, they were without two of their starters, Jonas Valanciunas and Kyle Lowry. So that is a little disturbing, I think, that without two starters, and yeah, of course, you know, Miami was without their starting backcourt, you know, of Goran and Deion Waiters, but that doesn't matter. You know, they've been without them for most of the season anyway, and they had still been finding ways to win. To have a 17-point lead at home, it felt like it should have been a game that they should have found a way to close out, and they did not. Still, you know, Dwayne Wade earlier that day after shoot around talked about a November 25th game against the Toronto Raptors where they wound up losing by 10, but they were down by a lot more than that throughout most of the game. And that after that game, it was a real eye-opener that Eric Spoelstra spoke frankly and angrily to the team, saying that you have to play better, because that showing against them on November 25th was really, really disturbing and, you know, obviously showed that they had a lot of room for growth. and that they were looking at this matchup a couple nights ago as a kind of an opportunity,
a barometer.
To establish some sort of barometer about how much they've grown. Clearly, they've shown some progress there, and I think they were able to make some really good things defensively. Put up a fair amount of points. Again, relinquishing the lead, not good, but overall, to compete against a really, really good Raptors team, I think it does show progress. So I'm curious to see if Miami is able to continue building. Look, they're going to be incorporating players coming back from injury. You know, Goran's going to be coming back at some point in February, barring any trade. I'm sure you're already making comments in your head about where he's being shipped out to. Dion Waiters should be returning to the team soon. We'll see how that upsets things or whether or not he's able to fit in seamlessly. So there's opportunity for this team here. I don't know how far they'll go. I think they can still compete for home court advantage, I think, in the playoffs. And I think if you had looked at a month ago, maybe you would have thought that that was absolutely ludicrous. And here we are now where they can potentially win 7 of their next 10 games on a pretty regular stretch. I mean, they've shown that they can compete at a high level against very, very good teams.
And look, they're, like you said, they're going to get better, right? That's kind of the idea here. Now, I don't know that they're going to be able, again, I don't know that they're going to rattle off wins the way they are, but they are going to improve. That's just based on the way that they're, again, those young players being empowered in roles, like they are just naturally going to improve. And if they are their best players, if they're leading this team, then the team overall should play better, especially when guys like Goran and Dion come back. And that'll be an adjustment when Spo tries to figure out how to fold those guys into the rotation. There will be an adjustment there. And I do think that this team will still make some moves. I don't know if it's trading Goran, but I think there are moves to be made. I think the Heat are going to make those moves. They still have the luxury tax thing to worry about. That's not going away just because they're winning games. And so stuff will happen. It's we've seen stuff happen in the NBA already. It's officially trade season. Stuff's going to happen between now and February 7th, but the trade deadline. But overall, this team is in a – I'm not going to say it's in a good place, but they're in a better place than where they were to start the season, and I think everybody should feel optimistic, and that's more optimistic than we were at the start of the season. But you mentioned the next few games. Let's look at the next three games. We'll do that after this break. All right, let's look ahead to next week and try to guess the Heat's record. This first game is tonight, Friday, against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Heat haven't played the Cavs this season yet. In case anybody's wondering, the Cavs don't have LeBron James, therefore nobody's watching them, therefore nobody really knows what this team is other than bad. David, you and I had to kind of look before we started recording here to see who even plays for them, who's starting for them. It's a bunch of players who aren't very good. Is that a politically correct way to put that?
I think that's a fair way, if not politically correct. I mean, obviously, they're rebuilding in a way that Miami did not have to after LeBron left in 2014. Obviously, Miami was able to retain two all-stars in Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, who were still capable of playing at a high level, not to mention adding Luol Deng and others. But this is not this group. Their best player, Kevin Love, has been hurt for the whole season.
Yep.
Hasn't really played much and will not be playing much this season because he's still bouncing back from injury. And in his place, they're starting and playing a number of guys there that maybe wouldn't be getting a significant amount of minutes anywhere else. Obviously, they fired Ty Lue, so they've got a new head coach situation. Everybody's clear about what's going on in Cleveland. This is clearly a tanking situation, and I think everybody's fine with it. They've got a number of guys that have come in and out of the lineup there. They've had a number of injuries befall their team. It's not a pretty sight. They're not putting up a whole heck of a lot of points. But the good news is that Miami is a team that can take advantage of that. So I'm curious to see how that plays out in their first matchup of the season. I'm predicting a win. How about you?
Yeah, I'm predicting a win here. I think that's – if the Heat drop this game, all of the optimism we've already talked about will go right out the window. That's just how Heat Nation works.
Let's look at that. I mean, Miami has dropped some games in the past to Sacramento, to Atlanta. I mean, the Kings are much better, obviously. But they've even last year when Sacramento was not particularly good, they lost to the Kings and the Hawks. They've lost to a number of times.
Yeah, they've had a bad habit of losing these types of games. And so this, you could argue in a weird way that this is as much as a barometer of the progress of this team as the Toronto game was.
That's a good point.
This is a game that you have to win. This is a game that you've lost in the past, in the last couple of years. You've had a bad habit of losing these games. Go out and win this game. And not to mention, they play Cleveland twice in this three-game stretch, one in Miami, one at Cleveland. But between that game, they play Minnesota. They wrap up a little three-game homestand here. Haven't played Minnesota this year either. So all these games, new opponents to them this season so far. And Minnesota also has a new look. So there's no really like looking like just like Cleveland. You can't really look back on at last year's team. This is going to be a team that they haven't seen before. Minnesota obviously trading Jimmy Butler, not to the Heat, but to Philadelphia. They've got Robert Covington, Dario Saric in the mix there now. Karl Anthony Towns seems to be playing better since Butler's left. I think that's going to be an interesting matchup, specifically if, you know, and it seems like the Heat will start Hassan Whiteside. I think Towns could take advantage of that matchup there, stretching Whiteside out to the perimeter. Whiteside struggled to do that so far this season. But I'd be interested to see maybe if Bam Adebayo gets any run, specifically in the fourth quarter, matched up against Karl Anthony Towns. That, to me, is what I'm watching in this matchup, is sort of the five versus the five here.
Well, for a guy that stretches the floor like Karl Anthony, I wonder whether or not they would try to use the zone to throw him off and kind of make things a little bit more difficult so that he doesn't get the typical wide open shot. I mean, if it's about reducing driving lanes to the hoop, you know, one of the things that he does so efficiently is, of course, stretch the floor and then capitalize on that space to open things up for him to get to the hoop and finish with an array of moves there. I wonder if the zone would limit what he can do offensively and maybe take him out and make things a little uncomfortable for him. Look, unfortunately, Derrick Rose is shooting at a high level from the perimeter. So again, if you're limiting the kind of shots that he gets, not making things as easy for him and reducing the number of open looks that he's had in the past, you could probably try to eke out a win against a good Minnesota team. I mean, look, they're struggling a little bit. They're not as talented as they were last year. They have some nice depth, though, I think, with Dario Saric and Robert Covington coming over in that Jimmy Butler trade.
Covington's going to be a problem for the Heat in this game. He has been historically, except in the playoffs. He was not very good. Yeah. But if you match up Covington against Josh Richardson, I think Richardson has been Miami's best scorer over this stretch. So I think Covington could pose some problems for the Heat in this game. That's another matchup. That's another key matchup here.
No, the thing is, though, Derrick Rose can't compete with point justice. So that's something,
right.
You know, that's something that Miami has definitely in their favor. I think he can, not only can he take him down low if he has to, but he can also get past him. I think at this point in his career, he's obviously much quicker than Rose is. So I'm optimistic.
The zone should do a good job against in baiting Andrew Wiggins too. Can't you just see like Wiggins being like, well, the way to beat the zone is to just launch threes, and then he just starts taking like 29 footers.
Yeah.
That's right up Wiggins' alley.
Now, the thing is, obviously, Wiggins not an effective shooter. But he's going to be defended by whom at this point? Is it Tyler going to be starting? Is it Rodney McGruder? I mean, both those guys are so undersized in comparison to Wiggins.
Another reason to bait him.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, he's not scored well against Miami in the past, so I'm fairly confident that will be the same trend this time around.
So do you have this as a win?
I do. I don't feel 100% comfortable with it, but I do feel that Miami playing well enough. And, you know, I've been bit by this in the past where I thought that they were going to play better and they've lost, and then I thought they were going to lose and they played better. So I'm a little hesitant. Maybe this will be the guess the record session that kind of cements that I should go in completely opposite what I'm feeling. But no, I feel that Miami can find a way to win against Cleveland the first time and against Minnesota the second time.
Yeah, I don't know where I'm at on this, because on one hand, I do feel like the Heat are a better team right now than Minnesota. Minnesota's, as the time of recording this, they're 4-6 in their last 10. You mentioned that they're struggling a little bit right now, but their talent and their depth is such that they're probably a better team than Miami. They're just not playing like it right now. Mm-hmm. They do have the best player in the game in Karl Anthony Towns.
You mean this specific game, not
this specific matchup? Yeah, I don't. Karl Anthony Towns has not surpassed LeBron James and the other like 25 players in front of him yet. But I'm predicting a win against both Cleveland teams in both Cleveland games, right? Because they play Wednesday at Cleveland, so I'm predicting a win in both of those. I'm really hesitant to say that the Heat are going to go 3-0 right now, as well as they're playing. As an optimistic as I sound, I guess for gamesmanship, I should pick this as a loss, because I'm imagining you're picking the Wednesday game against Cleveland in Cleveland as a win as well.
Yes, I am.
So I'm going to go with a loss here so that we don't have the same thing. Mm. That makes sense?
No, that's fair. Hey,
okay.
When I win, I'll take the season lead and guess the
rest. And then look, I could very well lose. I kind of think Miami's going to win this game. I'm going to pick a loss, though, only because I don't want us to pick the same thing. We tied last week. I don't want to tie again. We automatically tie if I pick this as a win. So you kind of had the advantage of getting to pick first. So I'm going to pick it as a loss, And then we both have the second game in Cleveland on Wednesday as a win. The Heat play later that week on Friday, but we'll do this again before then. Let's really quick go through the jersey swaps. We both had, by the way, going back to last week really quick, we both had maybe OG Anunoby getting the jersey against Toronto. You mentioned, I think, that Wade could go with DeLon Wright.
I didn't after the show, I think. I mentioned it after the show.
Oh, you did. We didn't record it, so there's no record of it.
But it happened, so, folks. It did.
He did end up giving it to DeLon Wright. You mentioned that there was a connection there. You were right. Post-recording, there's no record of it, but I'll admit it. Channing Frye against Cleveland, maybe in that game in Miami?
It's a nice one. I think, you know, obviously Frye, a beloved member of that team. He was friendly with D. Wade when he was a member of the Cavaliers, although we've forgotten that. That terrible stretch there. Look, he's a longtime veteran, a glue guy, fun to hang around with on road trips. I could see Dwayne Wade making that connection there.
He was on his podcast, right? Wade was on the podcast with LeBron when they drank wine. Yeah. Speaking of former teammates, when they play in Minnesota, Derrick Rose, that makes sense. You and I aren't super happy about that because of obviously the history there. But that if you had to pick somebody, that's the one that makes sense.
It seems much more likely than a guy like, you know, either Wiggins or Karl Anthony Towns, you know, who, you know, clashed so notoriously with Jimmy Butler would get a jersey from Wade being a close friend of Jimmy. So,
and then it seems unlikely Cleveland will get two Wade jerseys. I feel like Wade's like, you know what, I've already given you enough with half a season of my career, but. If just for the spirit of picking things, I guess, which is what we're doing here, that second game in Cleveland, it'd be nice to see Wade give the jersey to Kevin Love. I know Kevin Love isn't playing this year, but they were teammates. They played together. Kevin Love just seems like a good guy. They probably got along, I would assume. Yes. And I think Wade's got a healthy respect for guys like Kevin Love. Seeing how, you know, you go from superstar level to basically like this third role, Wade witnessed that in person with Chris Bosh. He probably has, I would assume, some sort of healthy respect for a superstar taking a backseat to LeBron James. And so maybe he gives the jersey to Kevin Love. And maybe he sees that as like, look, Kevin, I know you're not playing, but maybe I'll brighten your year by giving you the jersey off my back.
That feels 100% correct. I will actually say, now that I think about it, that maybe it'll be the inverse, that he'll give the jersey to Kevin Love in Miami, being that Kevin is a little bit more of a Miami guy, and then Channing being a local favorite in Cleveland. I think it would be a good PR move for D-Way to give it to Channing in Cleveland.
All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. And leave us a rating and review while you're there. By the way, if you got an Amazon Echo or like a Google Home thingy for Christmas, you can tell that thing to play podcast Locked On Heat, and you'll start hearing all the podcasts just throughout your entire home. It'll be great. Connect on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Get your mailbag questions in now via the Twitter handle or the email address. We'll have a mailbag going up Monday, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.